listening to the City Lights Equipping Podcast, where we are helping you identify your next step in exalting Jesus and extending the kingdom of heaven right where you are. If this podcast encourages or challenges you, please leave us feedback on our iTunes channel and share on your social media to help more people discover the very same things that are stirring you in your walk with the Lord.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, City Lights Equipping Podcast listener. Do you know the reference, Oliver, to that little intro I just did with the good morning? Good afternoon.
Oh, that's Robin Williams. Robin Williams, Good Morning Vietnam.
Well, I got you Good Morning Vietnam, but it's actually Jim Carrey, isn't it? Isn't it Truman Show? And he's like, hey there, neighbor.
In case I don't see ya.
And he says, in case I don't see ya. Yeah.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
That's right. Hey, podcast listener, we are so glad to be with you today. My name is Chris Armfield. My parents call me Christopher Allen Armfield when they really want to get serious. Oliver, what's your full name?
Oliver Leon Wong.
Leon.
It's a translation from my Chinese name, which is Wong Leon.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a meaning of peace and safety. For those of you wanted a little Chinese lesson podcast listener.
And you provide that for people.
Thanks. I hope it's a prophetic thing.
My name must be don't get lost in the dust because I'm running. not escaping, but it means like I'm on the move and risk. And no safety guaranteed.
Is that really the?
That's not the meaning. Christopher means like bearer of Christ. Uh-huh. So what can you do? I'm just thinking. I think your name matches your personality and what you provide for people.
I think that
some people would say, if that's true, Chris, you tend to like. For instance, when people are following me in traffic, I get yelled at when we arrive at our destination. Like, well, you just left me in the dust. And I'm like, well, I was trying to lead the way to get there. Like, well, when you led the way, you didn't wait up. And I'm like, sorry. So. I don't want to be that insensitive, but I will confess, sometimes I'm so forward-thinking that I'm not forgetting about them. I'm just thinking, our goal is to get there. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, forsake everything else. Podcast listener, we are so glad to be here with you today. I don't know if you know Jim Carrey. I don't know if you know Robin Williams or their films or their contributions. There's been so many interesting things about Jim Carrey in the last year out from his painting and artwork. I'm an artist, and I personally really like some of the story and the style of his artwork, but he's been doing a lot of interesting documentary type things. And Robin Williams, of course, committed suicide a few years ago now, but we don't mean to start on that heavy note, but just that was the influence. Culture happens to be stuff that we're engaged in, and it impacts all the things we think and do because our faith is lived out in the real world. And podcast listener, that's one of our goals, is to sit with you and help you understand where you are so you can live out who you are and who you are with Christ in that partnership right where you are, wherever you are. So we're glad you're here with us today. We're going to continue our conversation in a moment about power and authority, and we're super excited about that. But before we jump in, why don't we talk about another cultural fun thing? I know that I overheard you and Timothy talking about The Office the other day. Why don't you share? Like, what's a favorite Office Michael Scott moment for you?
It's what brings everybody together. Everybody has had an Office experience. I think that's why we can all enjoy The Office starring, not Michael Scott, starring
Steve Carell.
Yeah, yes. As a wonderful comedian, Steve Carell.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about just The Office today. One of my favorite Office episodes is the Office episode about Prison Mike, if you guys remember, when somebody comes into the Dunder Mifflin branch from the other branch into Scranton, and he brags that he was in prison for a short amount of time because of some minor infringement of tax evasion or something like that. And he shares with the rest of the office that, in fact, which is a great threat to Michael Scott, in fact, that his time in prison was more fun, relaxing, enjoyable than working in the office itself, which is really, of course, if you know Michael Scott's character at all.
Those are fighting words.
Those are fighting words to him, yeah. So he gets pretty upset about it. And so he
do the Prison Mike
he
voice?
He then goes into an alter ego that he calls Prison Mike.
I'm Prison Mike!
To give a different spin on the narrative of what it might be like to be in prison compared to being in the office, which, according to him, is wonderful, working under his leadership and his bossing or whatever. So, anyways, he just talks about, I'm Prison Mike, and I hate living in prison. I'm so glad to work at Dunder Mifflin because Dunder Mifflin is so much better than working in prison. So that was one of my favorite things that came to mind when we thought about The Office and
so funny
different anecdotes in that.
One of my favorites. It's one of those things like, you know, when people say a car wreck is so bad or incident so bad you can't help but look away because it's so disturbing. That's The Office for me. It's so bad. I'm like, oh no, he's not going to say that. Oh, he's not going to do that. But one of my favorites is when he and his, I don't know if they're married or not, Jan, but they're hosting a party. A bunch of the other employees came over to their house. And it was just disaster after disaster. Like Mike, you could tell that Michael Scott, his character, was just being completely controlled and looked down upon by Jan. But he shows his TV that's like hanging over the fireplace kind of thing, and it ends up being like smaller than a computer screen from right. Dell. Right. And it's on this like pivot thing, so it comes off the wall like 6 inches and turns. And he's all impressed. And then he shows them their bedroom, and he shows where he sleeps and she sleeps, and he sleeps at the foot of the bed, like where I put where I like put up my shoes on in the morning. It's a bench,
right?
And he's like, it's super comfy,
right? Or
and
the then, dog, the household dog, would sleep in the same exact spot
absolutely.
As Michael did.
It's only
right.
good big enough for that. Like he had to curl up in the fetal position. But that episode for me was just disaster after disaster. To me, I'd call that it was a beautiful disaster. It was so bad I couldn't look away.
Yeah.
So funny stuff. It makes me scared sometimes when I watch The Office. Like, what if I actually lead like this? What if I actually am a person
well,
who
we
uses
all are,
my
in
power
a way,
and authority
aren't we?
In these blind, ridiculous ways? You know, it's scary to think that we could lead like that or do things like that and not be. Because Michael Scott doesn't realize he's totally like he
well,
when he
I
did Prison Mike, or he shows that little TV. He's like, wow, isn't this amazing? And everybody
right.
else is going. What are you talking
well,
about?
Well, he's a classic parable of the emperor with no clothes. We're all,
right.
We all know somebody
right.
that's like Michael Scott. And in a lot of ways, we laugh at ourselves because we're like Michael Scott.
Yeah.
Saying inappropriate things, being a little bit too self-centered at times, trying to make an ego or an image for ourselves. That's
mm-hmm.
really an expression of kind of what it is
mm-hmm.
to be human in
right.
a way, you know? So,
can be.
You know, we just, you know, we bring that up today because, podcast listener, if you've been listening along with us, go back to the last episode. We've been talking about this issue, as Chris mentioned earlier, about authority and power. And Michael Scott is almost this parable of a non-example or a cautionary tale about what not to do with authority and
right,
power,
right.
not understanding the authority power that you have or
yeah.
not wanting to take responsibility over the authority and the power and the delegated power that you have.
Mm-hmm.
I think Michael Scott is probably the case in point of what not to do or the
mm-hmm.
cautionary tale of that. But authority and power today, our focus is really about authority. We talked about last time is supposed to be a gift. Power is
yeah.
supposed to be a gift given by God. God ultimately is the power holder and the impetus, the cause of power in the earth, power just being influence. And what we want to talk about today, podcast listeners, is you think along with us, is how do we identify if power is using to hurt or to help?
Hmm.
Is it's a gift. It's meant to be used to help and to cause things to flourish, to have life, to come to their full potential. Around us, the authority that we're using, is the power that we're using and the authority and influence we have, is it being used to help others or hurt others?
Yeah.
Or when power is kind of used towards us or over us, let's say, in a boss relationship or a teacher relationship or parent relationship, how do we know if that power is being used rightly? And
yeah.
that's kind of what we're talking about today.
I love it. So last week, it's a gift. It also can be dangerous. And then today, I know I've heard you use words like help and hurt. Also words like redemptive.
Mm-hmm.
Like how can power and authority cause things to become better, but like re-enlivened in a sense, come back to life.
Yeah.
Redeemed. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean redemption and redeemed.
Yeah.
Trying to think of something else, you know, and I would put an opposite of that something's ravaged or destroyed. And, you know, when that's our topic, that's
mm-hmm.
where we're going to go. I know you selected Matthew 20 as our point verse. So,
yeah.
podcast listener, I'm going to read this and then Oliver, I'll throw it to you to make some opening comments about this passage. This is a story in the book of Matthew, in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 20, verses 20 through 28. And we hear a lot about, actually, Oliver, when I was looking at this passage that you chose, and it's an illustration, but it's also an actual story that's taking place. You see a lot of different players here from what you'll see is a mother talking to Jesus about disciples and then how Jesus is teaching about authority and power. So podcast listener, listen to this passage, Matthew 20. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him with her sons, came up to Jesus, and kneeling before him, she asked him for something. And he said to her, well, ma'am, you know, what do you want? And she said to him, say that these two sons of mine are to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left hand, in your kingdom. So contextually, they certainly had in a mindset that the kingdom would be on earth, and basically, can my sons be your vice presidents? You know, if we're thinking about American culture, can they be the two top officials in your government? And so Jesus fields her question. He's a generous listener and allows her to ask any question, of course, and he responds. So Jesus answers in verse 22, you do not know what you're asking. "Are you able to drink the cup that I'm to drink?" They said to him, "Well, yes, yes, we're able." So you have the mom asking, but they're responding, "Yeah, we can drink that cup. You know, what is that?" And he said to them, "You will drink my cup, but to sit at my right hand and at my left hand is not really mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." Verse 24, "And when the 10 heard it," so his other disciples, they were indignant. They were really, really mad at the two brothers. Mm-hmm. But Jesus called them to him and said, "Hey, guys, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them," like use it over them as a lord, like position themselves over people, "and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you, but whoever would be great among you must first be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave. Even if the Son of Man," which is a description from the Old Testament that the Messiah would come and rule like a human, and all the rulers before were described to be like beasts. So even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for the many. So that would be the example of service. So Oliver, why'd you choose this passage? Bring us into this. Help us understand how this fits in with our conversation today.
Yeah, I brought this passage in because as we've been talking about this whole time, that authority and power is not just a church conversation, us being City Lights and this being a podcast primarily just about the equipping of the church. But ultimately, it doesn't take the church to identify, look, the world is full of authority and power, and how you look at that authority and power matters. And Jesus was not opposed to talking about what matters most. And so this, you know, what precedes this conversation is what is a continual dialogue between the disciples, which is who's the greatest? You know, that whole back and forth. Am I the greatest? Because of I know this, or I've done this, or I can accomplish this. And every time that that conversation comes about, because it comes about in the world all the time, in your world and in my world, the power struggle that goes on between spouses and children and siblings happens all the time. Jesus speaks into it and he says, we're going to be able to identify the difference here. Power is a gift. There's a difference, though, between when power is leveraged for good and when it's leveraged for evil, for darkness. And so the distinguishing line, I just bring that up because I think obviously Jesus would be the utmost authority on how to use both authority and power. He draws the line. He's not, you know, ambivalent about what that line is. And what he essentially says is, we know that power is good when it is used to serve and for the benefit of others. And that's a very helpful statement for us today. As we kind of closed up last week, we talked a lot about Genesis 1 and the discovery of God's power on display purely without sin. Genesis 1, 1 through 11 tells us almost more about God and his uninterrupted creativity than almost any other verse in the Bible, because it's without sin, right? Genesis 1, 1 through 11, that poem of created things and they're good and created things and they're good is the best reference we can choose to identify power without the interference of man. And what we see in Genesis 1, as well as we see in the scripture, is any time that God is using power, is that power is used not to hoard, to defend, to protect. If anybody is deserving of glory and using power to uplift themselves, it would be God. But God decided to lower himself, I believe, not only in Jesus, but in Genesis 1, to create things that are lesser, and gave his strength, gave his power, gave his authority, and lent itself so that others outside of the Trinity, outside of Trinitarian God, could enjoy, could have pleasure, could have beauty, could share in glory, could have image bearing, that somebody else could reflect him. This is, you know, man who's created in my image. Power wasn't jealous in God. He wasn't jealous or worried that power would get taken from him or that sharing would lead ultimately to disunity and attack. Power was something that was used not to protect, but to create. Something that was made to give life, not take away strength and power. Power wasn't scarce. In this way, power was shared so that it could be multiplied, so that other image bearers, as we've talked about before, could not only maintain and keep the property, but develop it and make it better so that when he would return, he'd find it in a power, he would find that power multiplied and shared as opposed to saved and kept and defended against.
So listen, I mean, I feel like the Genesis illustration story you share makes a lot of sense when we look at it pure. Didn't mean that there was an option for rebellion or improper use of power and authority at the time. There was. But we don't have to have a huge contrast and fallout and evil to understand the goodness of that moment. And so we don't want to just look at that Genesis story and go, oh yeah, but there was no evil, there was no enemies, there was no this or that, because we know there's eventually a tempter in the story,
right,
that really changes,
right,
the way we view things, for sure, if only to mention that. But I really appreciate how you're talking about how power and authority is meant to benefit those around us. I've heard you say, and we talked about this in our preparation for the podcast today, that power and authority is a gift, and that gift is meant to be given away.
Mm.
And that can be all sorts of things, whether it's literally a gift of giving inheritance or possessions, or it's a gift of protecting somebody so that they don't, you know, a sign can be who has the authority to put that sign in the road and who has the power to do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We can appreciate them if it protects us from falling into a hole with our car and,
yeah,
busting it up. You know, that's someone using their power rightly.
Right.
I'd love to ask you, how would you define, Oliver, a mythical statement or thought about,
right,
power authority? And then what about a truth that we can, that is so reliable that could be trusted?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like your idea about when you say signs, that goes back to civic kind of,
yeah,
ruling,
yep,
and governing. And God, obviously in Romans, talks about God has delegated authority on the earth and those things are good.
Yeah.
There are some people, and this is where we get into the fact that, that power, it can compete. It's not meant to compete, but
mm-hmm,
it does feel like competition because some do have more authority over others. It doesn't,
mm-hmm,
have to be a bad thing, like we brought up before about parents have more authority for a given time over their children,
yeah,
which delegated in love is ultimately a great thing. Power, you know, is given to some people more and above over others, is delegated by way of divine intervention. That's the way that God intended it. But when somebody has that power to create a road sign or to create a law or a citation or whatever it is, that's ultimately meant, you know, to serve.
Yeah.
So the myth today would be that power is something that the person that has power uses to defend their power,
mm,
and to make themselves rich, like we talked about in the passage in Matthew, where the leader in the Gentile word, right, the non-Jewish in this sense, or the non-kingdom, I think Jesus would almost make a synonym there, the non-kingdom sense, would use the power to protect their own interest,
mm-hmm,
and to say—
secure a place for themselves.
Secure a place.
Hem them away from any threat or danger.
Right.
Make sure they have a cush path ahead type thing. That's what—
Right.
Yeah.
So power— power, the myth of the day would be that power is for protection, self-preservation.
Mm.
And the truth to trust, if we were to look more of at the back end of the passage we read in Matthew or in Genesis we referred, is that power is ultimately a means to an end for creativity and for creation. It's,
mm,
not for protection of self. It's for the mutual benefit of creating something together, the way that the Trinity decided to submit, you know,
mm,
mutually,
yeah, okay,
submit to each other, each other's power, and work together so that together they could create something better. Yeah.
I've heard you use the word also, that the truth to trust, authority and power are responsibility as well.
Yeah.
And so would you say that somebody who has authority or power with, let's say, a message, a form of artwork, parenting, fathering, friending, coaching, bossing, whatever it is, what is their responsibility? You,
mm,
know what I mean? Like, because I think that's a true statement you make, but, mm, I'm really interested in why you chose that word. Oliver prepares notes for our podcast, and you put on there for Truth to Trust responsibility in,
mm,
that. And so, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like what you're saying is if you do have power or authority, you have a responsibility for others to be benefited,
yeah,
or by that. I mean, am I on the right track of thinking when I hear the word responsibility that I have at least a responsibility to protect somebody else's rights,
mm,
to for them to be creative,
mm,
their rights, you know, I mean, I can't help, to be candid,
yeah,
with everything going on in our media right now from the last 2 years, from riots because of police shootings, which the motto is to serve and protect. It's on every law enforcement vehicle.
Yeah.
I'm a white man, so I don't know what it's like to be a minority, especially African American in our country. So I cannot know what they know or feel what they feel.
Right.
I know that I feel a lot of peace when I see a police officer, when I'm not driving, but when I see a police officer, when I'm walking around anywhere, my sense of safety goes up because,
mm,
I do believe he or she is looking out for me to preserve my rights.
Yeah.
So when you use the word responsibility, that's where my mind goes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you mean by that? Help us understand that some.
So it gets pretty, you know, theoretical and theological when we even talk about the macro, the police side of it. But, you know, like the example I have down here in the notes to talk about is, like, I reflect a lot on, you know, relationship in you and your relationship, podcast listener, with direct authorities, like, let's say your parents, your mom or your dad, or maybe a close family relative, uncle or coach or something like that. When I am 8 years old, you know, I reflect back of that time in relationship with my dad. My dad had more authority, both in terms of our family contract, but also just in terms of he just knows more than me. You know, he's better at things than me. He's been there before. He just has an authority and influence that I would ask him for that authority. I'm not afraid of that at all, at, you know, in that phase of life, and I'm not competing for it.
Yeah.
At that point in time, yes, like in a way we almost, now I'm a dad of Leo who's nine, I'm borrowing Leo's authority from him in a way, because the decisions that he's making dietarily, sleep-wise, because he doesn't have the history or the skills or the, you know, past to be able to leverage and be responsible for a certain domain, I'm almost taking over parts of that domain. Even if you think of a baby, it's like even down to diaper changing and going to the bathroom, these basic needs, like that's what we're responsible for. So yeah, in a way, I'm almost saying that power shifts change, and they should change. And if, in a sense, power should work its way out of a job, in the way discipleship, I think, is one of the best ways to, know, illustrate correct use of power. When he says, go and make disciples, it's saying raise people up. In other words, if you have authority in the biggest authority, which is kingdom, if you have authority in the kingdom, that shouldn't be stagnant. A healthy kingdom relationship shouldn't be one disciple always being over the other disciple, nor should it always be that a father is always like perpetually making somebody so that they're not ready to launch. But I'm doing my job right with Leo, let's say, or my dad did his job right with 8-year-old Oliver, so that when we're 18, that power is actually multiplied.
I mean, now, I need to ask some questions.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Did you mean that you're borrowing some of Leo's authority? Do you mean that? Versus what I heard was, basically how I interpret that is Leo or any human is born with, I don't know if I want to say the same amount. Like, I feel like you have more authority than Leo, true or false?
I would.
Or you make an argument that everybody has an inerrant authority to themselves.
I would say, I would say that in our relationship, based on even like the Ten Commandments, or, you know, obviously things like delegated authority, if we need to talk about and discuss those things, it's not just that I always choose my own authority and just apply it over Leo. So there's some discussion involved in that, what that means. But I would say, yes, like ultimately God has all authority and he delegates all of that authority. And I feel that
So when a human being is born, they have a level of authority is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty equaled one, correct?
I would
except for like people of privilege where, you know, a baby prince is born, they have a, disproportionate.
That's an exception level to the rule. Right, that's an exception. Yeah.
But I just think that's an interesting for podcasts. I mean, at least it is for me right now. So I would imagine it's for some of you podcast listeners. Oliver's making a point for food for thought. I know it is for me right now in real time that everybody is born with a certain level of authority. And when you mentioned the reason I bring it up, Oliver, because you said you borrowed some of his authority, which it sounds like is, son, you have 10 things. I'm not going to let you use all 10, so here's 3.
Right.
And I'm going to show you how to use these 7.
Exactly, yeah.
And once you understand them, come take them out of my hand in a practical way, or I will hand them to you when you can be entrusted with them. Is that, in a sense, what you're saying?
Right.
But yet he should – but in that, but you're also responsible for that,
right,
which he's responsible for, right?
Right.
I mean, so there's responsibility in both places, but you're – I guess a good parent would ask permission, hey, can I show you how to do this versus just do this? I guess that's a different way that we weld our own power and authority over someone.
So one of my favorite memories is like going to Chicago every single winter with my dad. We'd always go around Christmas time and just freeze our butts off in there because it's so cold. It feels like you don't have any. You're like, wait, did I remember to put on jeans?
Because literally been,
the cold
I heard the
air
wind.
Is blowing through your jeans.
I was going to say, I've heard
so
the wind is just
fervently.
Brutal.
It's just awful, yeah. Huh. But I remember going there as an 8-year-old. And versus going there when we're 18, when I was 18, obviously, by the time that I'm 18, now I'm driving, now, or when I'm 21, now we're able to enjoy a glass of wine together. There's obviously different levels of responsibility every time that you get older. My point is, we enjoyed more wealth. I wouldn't say necessarily more joy. There's always joy to be had, but we enjoyed things like, you know, more rest because one of us can drive while the other one sleeps, or more
a richer experience,
more money, or richer experience because we have a dialogue and discussion. We can enjoy movies together. It's not just a give and a take. It's a give and a take both ways. It's a two-way mutual symbiotic thing. That to me is a beautiful picture, Chris, of authority maturing itself and power maturing itself to what it's meant to be. Mm-hmm. If power, again, back to the myth, is about protection, if my dad, which he never would, because this is really, we're hinting towards a lack of love. If love is there, if true love is there, then power is shared. And what happens is the power is multiplied. So if dad worked against me instead of for me, it would be, you'll never get the directions right. You're never going to be responsible enough to drink. You're never going to be, you know, as smart as I am. So I'm going to dictate all the conversation and you're not going to talk at all. Well, that would not only inhibit my experience mm-hmm. and keep me from my authority, which I'm using very like hyperbolic kind of right. extreme ideas here. No father would ever do that. Hopefully that's obvious as you're listening to this. But you know, if he would have kept me from my authority, not only do I suffer from that because I don't get to grow into the fullness of my own authority and power and my sort of note to play on the earth or my input influence, but then he also loses mm-hmm. because now when I'm 18 and 21, if he's dwarfed me, so to speak, or been a ceiling instead of shoulders to stand on, now we're not talking, we're not synergizing, we're not partnering, we're not able to. There's ways that me and my dad even talk on the phone every Tuesday and we contribute to each other's lives both ways. And yeah. so we're talking about things on adult levels of his retirement, you know, what's going on with his teaching career versus he's talking to me about my parenting and my kids. And so there's a mutual synergy that comes. And if power is a zero-sum game where it's a win-lose and only one person holds power and we're not sharing, then both people lose mm-hmm. because that means that power's, that's to me the epitome of power being abused. Mm-hmm. So if you're in that work relationship or that marriage or that team or whatever it is, any friendship, and power in the relationship, because power's everywhere, if power isn't being shared, if it's just sort of you do what I want you to do, my voice matters, yours doesn't matter. In a marriage, for example, man, that's not the best for what God wants. That's yeah. not what God, that's not why power exists. When you have one, you know, leader or in a business, let's say in a Michael Scott situation in a business, and that leader just sort of says jump and everybody else says how high,
right.
that business is never going to be able to compete mm-hmm. with the one where there's a team dynamic and so powers
overplayed shared authority and underdeveloped because they don't have opportunity. Overplayed exactly. by the boss man and or woman. And all right, I want to do some rapid fire. You ready?
Yeah,
We've never
it.
Done this before, but
yeah.
I want you to give me a word or a compound word. I'm going to say a different ages and a different, I'm going to give you a different demographic, like a 16-year-old boy, mm. a 22-year-old newlywed with baby, mm. A 60-year-old woman. And I want, could you just give me just real basic, what does authority look like? Because I'm thinking of a podcast listener who is, yeah. You know, 23-year-old woman, single, lives at home, and she's going, I don't think I have much authority at all or power. Can you help remove some of the blinders? And I'm asking this for me as well. Mm. So I'll even use myself as a descriptor, but let's start there. Do you understand the question?
Yeah.
So like you're going to just basically, instead of using the word authority or power, you could say an example of the authority that the 16-year-old has is.
Yep.
You don't have to use that sentence. But I just, to me, to bring this conversation to a wider clarity, uh-huh. a more grounding.
Yeah, practical.
I just don't, because a lot of people don't use the word authority or power much yeah. in their day-to-day, or we're scared to,
right,
at least.
Right,
and I think that, you know, like with Spider-Man New, I can climb on walls and do all these things. I have a unique power,
yeah.
and there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. But for those of us who can't climb on walls and aren't yeah. superheroes, it's sometimes hard for us to imagine us as authority and power.
Mm.
So let's start with the 16-year-old boy who lives in the United States of America. What's an example of authority or power that yeah. he has? You know, that doesn't have to be one word, but I'm going to ask a bunch of them because yeah. I want to think about all of our listeners.
Yeah, yeah. So 16-year-old boy and authority and power, I would say, you know, I think that in a 16-year-old place in the demographic, you are a culture maker, whether or not you know it or not. I would
which
look
is authority,
to
or is
like,
that power, or are those the same thing in this context?
I would say influence is power, and so I would say that is probably more in the, it's both, but I would say more in the area of power.
Right.
Authority, I would say, is usually the direction people are looking for decisions, or looking for influence. Whereas I would say you can use power without necessarily authority because right. you're just kind of de facto influencing the situation, but almost by surprise. And that's why I would almost say a 16-year-old, some of the contexts I'm thinking of, things like, you know, social media, the way that you share, what you retweet, what you like, those are all influences. In your social, it's a lot of, because 16-year-olds are not fully in that kind of occupational, fruitful role. You're right. Just in a highly identity development role. You're influencing people around you in the way that you found identity. Yeah. What do you find your identity in? What do you value? What do you uplift? What do you kind of oppose or, mm-hmm. or say that is not worthy of value? So if you're in high school, what you're laughing at, you know, who you're, whether you're confronting the bully, being passive towards the bully, or being a bully yourself, mm-hmm. All of that, I think, is your realm of authority and power. Those decisions that you're making are influencing others, and that's probably some of the scope of what I would say.
I like the bully illustration as well. I think that if I post an Instagram about some issue or whatever it might be, that's a power move. Mm-hmm. I'm an authority to all those who have subscribed to my Instagram, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I have 100 followers, and they all just got a message on their phone in real time, and what they decide to do with my statement reveals my power and ultimately whether I'm authority to them.
Another one is, power, like we've talked about before in this podcast, the comparison trap, which was one of the most viewed or listened to podcasts that we've done, because it affects everybody, 16 and beyond. But the power trap is that if power is scarce, again, if you're believing the myth as a 16-year-old, is that if she's pretty, then I'm not pretty. Mm. Or if he's good at this sport, then I'm not good at this sport. Or if mm-hmm. he plays this role, then I'm not that. And so I think powerlessness is to almost run the opposite pendulum and say, well, that seat's been taken, so that's not me. And
if
so
there's an authority there, there's no space for me to have an authoritative voice or right.
Yeah, so you're reacting to that. Mm. And so I would just say, you know, to the 16-year-old, if there is, or we're all 16 in some ways, we're all processing comparison and that sort of thing, is just saying, look, like, I mean, we learn this, right? Even in real time and in high school, like when you're generous to somebody else, like I know at different times people have given me things like shirts off their back or shoes that I've said, hey, I like those. And people are like, hey, you should just have these. That multiplies joy.
Oh,
and it doesn't,
sure.
You know what I mean? It means that if you have joy in giving and I have joy in receiving, which again, sharing materials or sharing ideas or sharing compliments, maybe that's even a more practical one. When you give somebody else a compliment as a 16-year-old, mm-hmm. that's sharing power and it multiplies mm-hmm. it and it makes their day richer and my day richer. Mm-hmm. And it really wages war against what I'm calling the abuse of what we're calling the abuse of power, which is power is scarce, resources are limited. You better fight tooth and nail. You better get people that are a clique around you and make sure that you're defended. And I would just say, if you're a high schooler in the kingdom and you want to share power, you don't need to be defined by a clique, and you don't need to defend and hoard and corner your own power to be legitimized. God sees you. He mm-hmm. knows you. He is giving you ultimate authority, and any gift that he's given you, nobody can take from you. Mm. And so generosity is not a threat to your power. It only helps you to grow in your authority and your influence. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, if you hear that and feel that today in your heart, then trust that voice. Mm. I mean, I think that's what I would think of in terms of
those
power.
Those are really good examples. Yeah. Let's go to 21 and a half, male or female person, all the way to 40, which is, for City Lights, that's the majority of people at our church fall in that range.
Right.
So male or female, married, unmarried, divorced, kids, no kids, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But just give us a sundry of examples of what authority and power, some descriptors, so that people are writing their cards and they go, whoa, I didn't know I had that much authority, or whoa, I didn't know I had that much power.
When you put me in those shoes, which I'm in those shoes, even back to the early 20s, is somewhat about, again, moving into generativity. I'd say there's probably a good era of time when we're figuring out our place in the world, our gifts, and what we have to offer and how we're going to leverage those gifts. I think if we're going from the model of true authority is leveraged when I surrender to his authority and understand my place in the kingdom and his as king, I go back to Joseph a lot with this. The younger Joseph is different from the older one. He spends 7 years in that prison. The first time his prophetic gifting, and I'm going to use prophetic, but it could be any type of leadership gifting, hospitality mm-hmm. gifting, anything that you are generative in, you're good at, you're producing and influencing with. Joseph's gift is used to benefit himself, right? Mm-hmm. So the first time that his prophetic gift is delegated, his prophetic gift, he has a dream and he tells his brothers, you guys all bow down to me, I'm awesome. And I don't know what happened. God just sort of had us on the line and he picked me and your guys' things all bow down to me. And so you see that the gifting is for me. It's for, I'm great at guitar, I'm good at singing. Mm-hmm. Even in the church, mm-hmm. I've seen that with leadership. Yeah. It's like, I use it as an identity marker and what I do becomes who I am. And that's where it all becomes backwards. You're almost using power against yourself in that way. So I would say that the alternative to that is that on the back end of his process with God is he spends 7 years, and who knows how what happens to him on the inner world. We know in the outer world he's largely confined physically, but on the back end of it, he learns to surrender his authority to God, and he realizes his gifts is not just for himself, it's his gifts are for others. Mm-hmm. And he realizes that when he blesses the Pharaoh, as we talk about, you know, even at City Lights, as we talk about blessing the city as opposed to hoarding our resources against them, we find out our welfare is actually in blessing the city, even in powers that we don't agree with don't respect. So Joseph surrenders ultimately to the God. It's not to, he knows that the real Caesar and the real Pharaoh is ultimately above the clouds, but, you know, he surrenders to God, and ultimately not only is he blessed, but then multiplication of power, right? So then Pharaoh's blessed. But then so his family is blessed, so the nation of Israel is blessed, and so God is blessed, and so power is put in the correct position. Instead of serving to me, it's serving to others. So if you're in that 20-something, it's just, I think it's that daily understanding and learning, wow, like, people are more important than projects. There's short-term fruit, and there's long-term fruit. And as I learn to use my gifts to better my environment, it actually, I don't lose the gifts. They actually multiply and return back to me. And as I bless others, I'm also blessed in my job. So to stop and teach another person, or to give authority to your boss, and you know what I mean? Like, that can be a painful experience and a trusting experience. You might think, oh, if I give it away, I'll never come back to me. Well, maybe not. Maybe God, you know, if God is really king over that situation, he sees that, he wants to honor that. And so it's, I guess I would just say, in terms of discovering gifts at 20s, 30s, and 40s, of opening your hands with those gifts and allowing a surrender for God to cause a multiplication and fruitfulness. Does that kind of make sense?
Well, yeah, I think you went further in a great way talking about Joseph. And basically what I heard you say is the maturation rate for, as we get older, should turn to others, rather than self-preservation or used on self in that regard. Because even in Joseph's story, he risked all the influence and all of his authority and power. He risked all
of it. There's always risk.
Oh, he risked all of it when he went to the Pharaoh and said, this is my family, and we're Jewish, we're Israel, and this is all this. He risked everything that he had, quote, gained, and in many ways earned. He risked it all for the sake of blessing other people. And I think that's Philippians 2. Jesus, though he was God, didn't consider equality with Yahweh God at the time. Even though he is Yahweh God in flesh, he limited himself by not finding, using the authority and power that was his for eternity prior. He submitted it for the serving of others.
Yeah.
And that is the epitome of authority and power right there. It's stunning.
Yeah.
Which, why are women predominantly, but some men coming out as well, saying, hey, I was sexually harassed, I was sexually abused, because they're going, the authority that had been given to me, like you describe, if there's a human being born, they have authority of your body has been violated by someone who was in power, and they took the authority away from me. You know, you talked about borrowing it from Leo. You never intended to keep it.
Right.
He said, let me help you know how to use a knife. Let me show you how to hold your younger brother, whatever it might be. But these people said, I'm going to violate your body for my desires, and you're never getting it back. I'm taking from you. So to use a real cultural situation that I think about every day right now in our culture, that's a really powerful expression of authority and power and the abuse thereof it. Mm. And we expect more of our, quote, rulers, authorities, governors, bosses, and real sad situation in the United States. We're not seeing that, but these words are so timely right now in our culture with authority and power and the use of it. But going back to the Leo or anybody else, is what are you doing with the authority that's yours, and how are you giving that away? And power, you have the power to give that away. And Jesus did it. That passage means literally shows that he pours all of it out.
Yeah.
Why? For others. He literally did it because they're just going to serve other people best to not get what I might want at the time, or feel like I deserve at the time.
And it's one of those deep questions, you know, that you'd ask God in heaven and have to have a dialogue about, of why do some have more power than others? Because he says, you'll always have poor. That's what he says. You know, that's one of the things, is you always have the haves and the have nots, so to speak, until kingdom come. You know, and so I guess it's
parabolic. The one who is effective with little is entrusted with more. To whom much is given, much is required.
Right.
So I would just caution. Oh, I want to be a teacher. I want this. I want that. And if I'm just fighting to get to that position so I have influence. Like, I'd just say being the lead pastor of this church is a huge weight.
And that's what I would call the responsibility teaching there.
Absolutely. So be careful of how much authority
with the responsibility.
You want. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm slower moving in my leadership decisions and the way that I do things now than I ever was when I didn't have as much, quote, authority, because now the authority comes with a level of power, and there should be a maturation. That's all I'm saying. For somebody to get to a higher place of position where they're overseen and can influence masses of people like Jesus was able to.
Right.
He was able to take little things like food and serve thousands rather than, hey, let's hang out with them and then feed ourselves. And it was amazing. And there was more than enough for the thousands.
More than enough. And yeah. That's a good word too, because power, I do think, and continue with that thought, but power should produce a more than enough. It's an abundance. And the root key of the
And that's
the
giving
whole,
away though. That's amazing.
The root of the opposite narrative there, Chris, and I don't want to steal, because keep going in that direction, but it's the scarcity idea that if there's not enough, so I'm going to fight tooth and nail to defend what's mine, as opposed to, no, there's more than enough.
Right.
There's extra food, there's extra fish, there's extra wine, there's extra. It's better.
And to think that because I'm an authority, I need to use my power to protect myself or preserve myself is counter Christ. It's anti-Christ. I'm not calling it inherently evil, but self-preservation is not a correct expression of inherited or earned authority or the use of power.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, like I think when a police officer dies in the line of duty, everyone mourns because they were out there for me.
Right.
They were out there to protect me. And they were there sent by God, like you said, to serve and protect and to bring about justice. I mean, so it's significant that they are using their authority and their power to protect me, and they died for me in that way, just like the military would do. And that's, I think it would benefit all of us to think some about those people who are doing it. I didn't ask anybody to go serve in the military today.
Right.
I didn't ask a police officer to go out and protect me today.
Right.
But that's the beauty of God's government and
that's
the
God's
heavenly
grace.
Economy.
That's
absolutely.
That's his hand in the world.
We wouldn't have known to ask for that. Yep.
Well, let me ask you this question. I think it's kind of a secondary but needs to be discussed little item. You know, part of the application of personal authority and how do I sit rightly in my own seat is if we are all kind of sharing authority together and right power ultimately looks like things becoming more fruitful mutually, then I can sometimes, obviously, I want to be careful of how I delegate authority, but also I want to be aware that power also is imposed upon me. So protest, things like even whistleblowing or, you know, being aware of abuse of power upon us or upon other people, like a bully, like we talked about in high school, the way we respond to abuse power, let alone if we abuse power and how we respond to our own abuse of power, but if somebody else in our world, if he's hitting you, so to speak, or if he's hitting your child, or if somebody's abusing their driving, you know, by drinking and creating a habitual or even, of course, one-time practice of drinking and driving, you know, what do you see in the Bible and from Jesus in the way of license to protest or license to, what does it look like? Because again, turn the other cheek, and I don't think that's a pacifist answer, but turn the other cheek does mean there is a limitation of what force can do. Martin Luther King, that whole thing of don't fight evil with evil, you know, return good for evil.
Yeah.
What does it look like in terms of, obviously we know, ideally, people will just use their power for redemptive good. But what we know is that's not always the case.
Yeah.
Some people are grabby. Some people are takey. You are going to work with a boss or a colleague or going to be in a school with a kid that is a bully. What does the Bible say in response to power that's already being abused?
Profound
question.
Profound question.
Yeah,
well, I'm just going to tell you my very first thing that came up, and I thought, oh, could that be right? And I think it is. Ultimately, when you say turn the other cheek, it's not about being passive or a pacifist. I think it's being I think it's saying, Jesus is saying the action that person's doing is an outward, but there's an inward reason to do that. And so don't wage war about the physical battle on the outside. There's a reason this person's hitting you. There's a reason this is happening. Now, that doesn't mean you allow yourself to be a victim. It doesn't mean that I don't protect a child from getting hit. I do. But would I re-engage with that person and institute, bring about the justice that I think is deserved to that person?
Yeah.
What I would say is no, because important. I don't know what my emotions are at that moment. My adrenaline level is at that moment. I don't know what led to that situation. I don't know what the child did, not that they deserve any form of abuse. And I don't know what that, what was in the mind of that person. Are they drug induced? Maybe they were poisoned. You don't know.
Right.
What Jesus shows us is there's always more going on than you see. Mm-hmm. And then you know.
Yeah.
That's why I would say City Lights, you'll hear me say this more and more, we want to be a center and a hub for understanding. Mm-hmm. So for me to lash out or protest,
right.
you better understand a lot before
That's
you do
good.
It. Now, it doesn't mean that there's not quick reactive moments that need to be, like, I don't feel like I have the, I don't want to get into how far you extend protection, but ultimately, mm-hmm. I will go to a great length to protect someone,
yeah.
but too often people go beyond that.
Right.
And like there is plenty of police brutality, and we are huge supporters of it, but there's cases that go to trial and it says, yeah, you went outside of your authority where there was no threat anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody took it further. Whether
right.
it's whether it's the criminal or it's the cop, they went too far and a drastic measure had to be done. Mm-hmm. I don't see myself, Chris Armfield, as a 39-year-old man, whatever who I am in authority I have. I see that I have limits
right.
today of what I can do and shouldn't do. So whether it's proactive authority or it's foolish decision like drinking, that impacts everybody. So
sure.
I think the morale for that, biblically, gospel, kingdom,
yeah.
really for me, the kingdom principle
well,
is you don't know what's going on. Do not be reactive. Do not be impulsive. Be slow to speak. Be quick to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Be slow to act. I just think that's the moral. And I think that's what Jesus is more
yeah.
about than he is anything else. He's like, there's more going on than you know. So
this is,
discernment's a
I
gift.
I almost hear, we started the word off with redemptive power. That would be also the proactive. But in the responsive power to those that have already been abused, I'm hearing that word reconciliation. If I'm hearing
mm-hmm.
to listen, to understand, to love, to see the person despite the abuse of power, not allow the sin
right.
to become the identity of who that person is.
That adult doing that, probably it was done to them. So,
yes.
like, I'm not giving them, it's not excusing their behavior.
Right.
But they need help too.
So, is my heart for reconciliation?
Right.
Is my, that's what I want
to
say, the response
to Yahweh,
is
their creator, wherever that delineation is between their identity and authority that was given to them at
that's
birth,
great. Yeah.
that they've left. That's where Jesus did war for us.
Yeah.
He didn't come and say, once you seem worthy to be saved, I'll
mm-hmm.
save you. He said, while you are unworthy, I'll save you. He didn't look at me and go, Chris, I'm going to wait till you do on the outward something that makes sense. He said, you're never going to get to that place, so I'm going to do for you in my authority, my power. I'm going to lay it down
yeah.
so that you can be entrusted with reconciliation like I give you. Stunning.
So, just,
so Oliver, pull us together
yeah,
somehow
two,
for the podcast listener.
Two questions to consider until next week, and there's just one more installment that focuses on less of the how and the what, but also the why and the what, but also the how. How can we walk better in authority and grow in the authority God's given us in his kingdom? The two questions I think of today, Chris, you might add a third if you think of
okay.
one, but it's just, you know, are you aware of the influence, the God-given influence that you have? Have you given that to somebody else? Have you become a victim to your own circumstance? Oh, well, my boss always does this, or my spouse always says this to me, and this will never change, and this is my environment and the authority that's imposed on me. Well, sometimes the authority others have, if we magnify it, it can absolutely minimize the authority that we have in our own hands.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a zero-sum game. It becomes something that I've got to defend and protect of the little, quote, control that I have. Listen, podcast listener, I think the gospel message, whether we talk about Joseph or Jesus and beyond, is that power is to those that are faithful with little, to those that identify the God-given image-bearing identity that they have and influence that they have, whether it's the tweets that we make or the comments that we have or the, you know, statements that we make towards our kids, all of that is power, all of that is influence. And it's just the question, with little that you've been entrusted, however little or big that is, do you see Genesis 1 generativity in that? Do you see life in fruition? Are you seeing partnership and shared vision? Or in any way, shape, and form, are you, you know, seeing that, you know, an anti-scarce narrative where you're defending, comparing, you know, jealous, you know, waiting for somebody to give you something before you take the responsibility that you know that God has given you to take. Those are important questions. I think of the fruits of the Spirit, you know, Galatians is one of them is self-control. I mean, a lot of times we want to defer to others' control. And if I could control what other people do, then I would feel better about myself. Well, God says, this fruit of the Spirit is he works inside out. And one of the first places we'll take authority over is ourself, mm-hmm. and whether or not we surrender ourself mm-hmm. to God's gifting. And so are you recognizing the God image bearing authority that you receive from Genesis 1 and identifying what's the most creative, life-giving, sharing, productive, joy-filled thing you can do today? Are you looking at the world and your day with those glasses or some reductionist view or something else? So just a challenge there. What do you think about Genesis 1 in your life today?
I love it. I'm only going to make a half comment, which is simply, I'd love for you podcast listener to look at your last week and say, where have I exercised power? And then based on that, say, what authoritative place does that mean I have? Mm-hmm. So whatever that looks like. And what I'd love for you to say is pray and talk with the Holy Spirit about what Oliver just said, your God-given God partnership with who you are if you're in Christ. You have a partnership with Yahweh. Yahweh is a partner with you. Was the power expressing nothing more, nothing less than the authority that you share with God? Mm. Because to do more or less is wrong. So some of us out there listening, a little too passive. Dare I say, you're a little too prayerful and you need to be a little more active. And some of you need to be a little less active and a lot more prayerful. Mm. So that's the beauty of tension. Avoid those gutters. And you do have authority. Do not do less than Yahweh has given to you. You do have authority. Do not do more than he is instructing you to do.
Yeah.
You can figure out what authority you believe you have by the power that you do or do not express. Podcast listener, we love you. Great discussion, Oliver. I thoroughly enjoyed today. A lot of surprises in our discussion. Mm. Wonderful. We'll see you next time or hear you next time or talk with you next time for episode 3 on Authority and Power, and we look forward to it. Adios.
Adios.